Hello, family. My name is Jeff Graves, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Fifth Tradition Group. Over on the other side of town, we meet Saturday nights. We have a speaker meeting at 7 o'clock, and we have a big book study Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Come see us sometime. We've got a great group over there. I've got a sponsor. I've got plenty of sponsees. I love doing this deal. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I'm going to choke up. By the way, I also love attention. And, you know, God has a sense of humor. I was a little intimidating. I was going to be talking after Katie Parker, for a couple of years. And then Katie ended up not being able to come. And then what do I get? God gives me 3.5 hour serving of Katie Parker on steroids over here yesterday. God has a sense of humor. He likes to keep me in my, keep my ego in check. So it's just funny the way that works. So I want to first off saying that I really do love Alcoholics Anonymous. I do consider you family members. I've got 15 years sober, and what I found in here, I found God, I found you, and I found me in these rooms. Oh, by the way, I do like attention, so notice that I don't have any tissues up here. So if y'all, I'll eat that up. Come on. So, I'm in a program that if I do this is designed, if I follow the directions in the big book, it is going to allow me to take the very worst mistakes of my life and turn them into assets to help others. I'm going to be able to rid myself of the guilt and shame of those days by helping others and seeing that literally my past mistakes are helping to save people's lives, God working through me. And also, I get to teach others, to show others, take them through the book and show them directions in there that if they do what's in there, it's something that's going to bring out the very best in them. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah, right on.
When a newcomer walks in the room, they walk in and they see the steps on the wall, and I'll talk about myself. I see the steps on the wall. I hear you talking about God, this thing about amends and stuff. I had none of that. But what I see is some of y'all have the light. Some of y'all are glowing. And that is what hooked me early on. It was, in Bill's story, you'll hear that Abby, here it is. You'll hear Abby when you read in Bill's story. Bill knew Abby from before. Abby walks in the door and Bill's laying in the hospital room and he says, there's Abby, bright-eyed, bright-skinned, bright-eyed. And Abby hadn't said a word yet. That energy is what attracted me when I came in here. God is in these rooms, especially in a conference like this. This is why I always encourage people that haven't been to one, come to one of these and you're going to feel it for yourself. It's something you got to experience. So let me go start with my story. I was born in the southern tier of upstate New York, a little small farming community, about 4,000 people. And it was, looking back on it now and seeing pictures of that area, I realized what a beautiful childhood I had. My mother was Catholic, and she had family, so we've always had these big gatherings. And I went to Catholic school, Catholic church, Sunday school. I did all that. And lots of family stuff every Easter, every Sunday, for Christmas and stuff, these big gatherings. On my father's side, I didn't really even know much about my dad. He never really talked about his past. He was a World War II hero. He fought at the Battle of Iwo Jima, and his boat was one of the most decorated in World War II. It was the most decorated of his class. And so I'm walking around as a child. I can't really get Dad's approval very much for anything. He's very stoic, doesn't talk about, shows no emotion except anger. And everybody's always talking about, your dad, your dad, your dad. And I really started seeking that kind of approval at a young kid, saying, that's what I need. Because even back then, I was like, something's missing in me. Something's wrong with me. Something's not right. I don't feel right going to church. I don't feel right in school. I just don't feel like I fit in my skin. And I couldn't fight in World War II, so I had to develop some other things to get that attention and to get approval. And that'll follow in my fifth step when I get to it, where I realized that was led to a lot of my demise. So I had a pretty good time in my early years, and I was about 8 years old. Now I'm still having trouble. I'm having trouble in school. Before I ever pick up a drink, I'm having trouble with concentration. I'm reading some of these report cards that I got, and it's like, well, he has very high aptitude, but there's always a but on it. You know, if he would pay attention, if he quit screwing around, and if he had, and you know, so I didn't get real good grades, and I just thought I just wasn't that smart. And later to find out that I had some other issues. But so I'm about 8 years old, and my mother gets diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she's given 6 months to live. My father does not have the tools to deal with this at all. I have a younger brother. I've got three other brothers and a sister. Most of them were out of the house, and my dad starts drinking alcoholically. He drank some on the weekends, but he starts drinking alcoholically while she's going through this. And over a 3-year period, I just watched her slowly, you know, and it was really ugly. And I guess I was about, 11, 12, and I started smoking weed because I just, right away, I'm escaping as a kid. And I'm in a town that's kind of depressed economically, and so I got into botanical sales as a teenager, and I was real good at it, you know. And I was always had the motocross bikes and the race cars. I had the Mopar race cars and stuff. 16 years old, you could get a license. And so I'm living that way, and then my dad comes to me one day, and he's very connected in the town, and he said, son, time to go. They're coming after you. And so I was living in the house still with him, and I was in senior year in high school. So I moved down and decided to follow some of these cats that I was running around with the botanical sales. They'd moved to some place. Now, I've never seen the ocean. Y'all probably heard of this place, but I hadn't. So they said, it's a place called Panama City, Florida. So I moved down there during spring break, and I got no idea what's about to happen. I got everything that I own in a suitcase, and they said, set that down, grab your bathing suit, we're going down to Miracle Store. I don't know what it is. I go down there, and for the first time in my life, I'm looking around, and there's great big loudspeakers outside of what Club La Vila now, playing the loud music. I remember Celebrate by Kool and the Gang was just coming out. So that's playing when I land. I still remember it because I'm looking around and there's drunk girls with bikinis as far as the eye can see. And I'm like, so that was the first taste of the fourth dimension for me. I had arrived. Just like in Bill's story, I had arrived. I'm calling all my friends from my front. I'm going, guys, you got to get down here. You got to see this. I mean, I'm blood, you know. And so keep in mind, at this point, I'm not drinking alcoholically. I'm not an alcoholic yet. By the time I left town, I was usually just going down to Island Park, that we called it, and having a few beers and hitting a couple tokes off of Doobie, and then I'd go home and go to sleep, and no problem. I get down to Panama City, Florida, and I dial up the drinking, but I'm still not drinking alcoholically. I'm 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. And but now I'm having a lot of fun, and it's working. I'm in the working stage, and so I get a job at a bar, and I'm doing some of that waiting tables and stuff. And then Panama City just has their seasons. I end up going down to the Keys and getting a job on a commercial fishing boat, and I lived down there for a couple of years, and I didn't drink at all. I hardly did anything. Because I'm working real hard and I'm enjoying Mother Nature. I'm out on the ocean every day. What a God. I mean, as a kid, I'm like just blown away by this. The drinking just is easy to stop and everything else. And then I decided to move to Atlanta and got a brother that lived here. So I came up here to go to school, and I decided I'd go ahead and hit Panama City one more time on the way up, because there was my friends told me I had a real good time that spring break. And so I came to Atlanta, and I got a job at TGI Fridays waiting tables. I kind of paused on the school stuff because I'm still having fun. It's working. And I worked my way into the bar industry. And I worked my way into the nightclub industry. And so now what I'm doing is I'm finding more and more of the people that are really hardcore partiers. And I'm getting into that scene where the nightclub scene. And I don't know if anybody heard of Club Rio. That was one of the places I bartended at. That was where Rob Lowe got in his scrape, and he hadn't had a drink since that stuff. That cleaned him up back then. And then I worked at a place called Pat Hurley's Backyard. I bartended there, and these were the hottest nightclubs in Atlanta. And now I'm drinking heavier, and I started school at about age 29. And I get my job at the first nightclub at age 29. And I'm starting to see that when I drink on a school night, just a couple drinks, I tend to miss school the next morning. That is what we call the allergy. The allergy had set in, I had crossed the line, I'd gone from being a hard drinker to a real alcoholic. So I didn't know that. And that's when consequences started rolling in. And that's when I had I'm starting to run in, you know, now I'm around the real hardcore partiers, the strippers from the Cheetah 3 and the Gold Club. I got the Colombian connection coming up and giving everybody the accelerants in the bar, all the bartenders. So now I'm starting to drink and do the accelerants, and I've already crossed the line into alcoholism, and now I find the accelerants allow me to drink a lot more. And I've got this staff that's with me at Pat Hurley's Backyard. They're drinking just as much as me. They're doing all the accelerants. We close down the bar at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we stay there, close down the bar, and have a private party until sometimes 7, 8, 9 in the morning. And here's the difference. And y'all see if you hook up with this. Those guys would drink a case and a half or 2 cases of beer over that period, just like me. They would do a couple grams of the accelerant, just like me, and then they would start yawning and say, I'm going home, I've had enough. And I never got it until I found you guys. I never understood why they could go home and go to sleep. I distinctly remember saying, did you go home and go to sleep? How did you do that? So I went down to the 24-hour clubs and finished my run. And so I'm getting into the stage of this thing where I'm really starting to get a lot of consequences. I'm not able to differentiate the true from the false. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just partying. And I fall in love with this one girl, and I like the girls too. I'm doing my thing. And I fall in love with this girl. And this was about 3 years before, 2.5 years before I came and found you guys. And so she's coming up from Savannah on the weekends, and we're doing our thing, and we're running hard and blowing it out for the whole weekend. And she goes back to Savannah. And we're talking a little bit about the future. And she says to me, after about 6 months, she comes to me and says, Jeff, I'm pregnant, and we're going to have to break up. And I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, I thought that we were talking. She said, yeah, but it's my husband's. How dare that woman? So she says, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we go down to my place in Savannah and blow it out for the weekend? We'll just have one last blowout. And so she said, my husband's at a convention in Las Vegas. I say, sure, let's do it. And I go down there, and she lives in this million-dollar home on the intercoastal in Savannah. They got 2 speedboats, race cars, they got the motorcycles, the houses all, yeah. And after I did that, I drove back to Atlanta, and I just was like, those old feelings about, see, I had distanced myself because I was Mr. Party Boy from what I really felt about myself from an early age. That really, if you ever get to know me, if you ever get close to me, if I ever let you all the way in, you're going to see what I feel about myself. I'm no good. I'm rotten. I don't add up. I'm broken. And that was what I got. When I drove back, I said, that's it. I knew it. I knew it. And I went to a whole dark place after that. And for the next 2.5 years of my life, Jeff was no longer Mr. Party Boy. I was now going home and locking myself in my condo and doing it. And just dark, ugly, lonely days. And I kept thinking that, you know, it's these accelerants doing this. And so I said, well, I had a bright idea. I'll just stop drinking because it seems like every time I have a craft beer, I'm doing the accelerants. So I sometimes get 3 weeks, sometimes get 4 weeks, I sometimes get 5 weeks. Then I go down to Dixie Tavern and I have one draft beer, 5 day run. I'm down at the bluff at the end of the night doing my thing, and I'm on a 5 day run. I wake up in a sweat ball after 5 days going, how did this happen? What is happening to you? You used to want to be somebody. You used to want to have a life. You used to feel like you could be something in life, and you're burning down. You're breaking it down. I didn't know what was wrong with me, so I decided I would go to Charter Peachburg to find out why, you know, to split this thing. Every time I have a drink, I'm doing the accelerants. But at Charter Peachburg, I entered the 28-day program, and I'll never forget, I walk in there, and they have us do write down the consequences of our drinking. They have a couple different categories. And by the third night, the first night was like legal. And I start writing down and I realize, wow, I've been arrested a lot. Wow. And I look at all these people in there and I'm like, man, this is like 28 days Sandra Bullock. You got people slurping on themselves, you know, they're disheveled hair, you know, asymmetric hair, they're greasy, wearing slippers and casts. And I'm like, these people are, maybe I'll catch them after the meeting and try to help them out. So we go over the consequences, and by the legal and then the health, and I realize, wow, every time I've ever been in the hospital in my adulthood, it's always had some knuckleheaded thing with me doing drinking. Accelerant's got nothing to do with this. And then they have us do the consequences, and they show us of relationships. Wow. You want to talk about getting a big dose of truth. I sit down there and I'm writing down the consequences of my drinking, which I don't even think is my problem yet. And I realize I'm writing down the consequences of drinking with roommates, with family, with the law, with bosses, with coworkers. And I'm discussing then the relationships with women. And I'm like, this is a dumpster fire. It was ugly. And I realized I'm sicker than I ever thought. I remember I looked down, I got a wristband that says Charter Behavioral Health. I'm like, I'm in a freaking nut house. I'm like, oh my God. So I call one of my buddies, and remember this, he used to run with me in the early days, and he called me every year or so, every 6 months or a year. He was like, Jeff, how's it going? And I'm like, who are all those people in the back? He was in a halfway house. Why are all these people in the background? What's going on? Where are you, Russ? You haven't drank in 6 months? You haven't drank in a year? Where are you? What's going on? So over the years, he keeps calling me. How's it going, Jeff? And the day came. Russ, help. He's the one that took me up to Charter Peachburg. My last beer was I told him I needed to pick up some smokes before I go in Charter Peachburg, you know. So he sees me in the Magic Mark. My last beer was a 16-ounce Schlitz malt liquor. Pounded that thing, and I said, ready to go home. And so I went in Charter Peachburg, and I learned there that, you know, all this stuff. And then I went to Mar after that, because I called Russ, and I said, what's wrong? You know, I'm sicker than I thought. Where was this place that you were talking about? And I went to Metro Atlanta Recovery Residence. But I'm a slow learner, and I'm also thick-headed, and I'm a knucklehead. And I think that I'm smarter than everybody, and actually my smarts almost get me killed a lot. That's just the truth. And so I ended up going in there, and I ended up eking out 8 years dry, coming to meetings. And I was going to this meeting in Vinings that wasn't really big book based, wasn't really sponsor based, wasn't really God based. And but it was hip, slick, and cool, and those guys sounded great. And I fit right in. I'm like, hey, y'all, see this watch? I positioned myself so that they could see my new watch that I just bought. Because now I've graduated from college and I've got a degree, so I did get through college somehow. And so I'm starting to make a little bit of cash, and I get married, and I get the house, and I get all that stuff. And I burn it down to the ground because I haven't changed my thinking. The same alcoholic will drink again. And I was the same alcoholic. I get married, and I got all this stuff going on. I'm hip, slick, and cool. But there's nothing inside. I'm a hollow suit. And along with everybody in that meeting, quite frankly, most of them. And I start relapsing. Well, first of all, things aren't going good at home. And I checked with my sponsor, and he said this was okay to have sex outside the house because I wasn't getting any at home, right? Well, thing was, I was my own sponsor. So I got about 5 years dry. I'm running my own life. I'm managing my own life. I'm not seeking guidance from anything or anybody except me and my ego and my hurt feelings. And so I do what I do. I go out and I hurt people. So I'm doing what I do. I'm rationalizing it. And I'm having to lie now. I'm going home. I'm a liar. I'm still a liar. I haven't changed. And then it catches up to me. And then what comes next? Just like you were saying, Jennifer, the drink is the last part of it. And then I go off on a series of relapses that darn near kill me again. And I can't live with myself anymore. And the last white chip, Mike was in, wherever he is, anyway, he saw me picking up all those white chips. And because I went to another meeting. The one I was going to, they were telling me, why'd you do that? You only drink if you want to. And I get angry at that group, and I go to another one. God got me out of there because I needed to hear the truth. I start going to a meeting where Mike is, and I'm picking up a series of white chips. And finally, I get broken down. I relapse over and over. And if you ever think in the back of your mind, well, I'll just do what I did last time to get better, that what I learned was the mental obsession and the physical allergy continue to grow even when I'm not, even in abstinence. So I did not pick up where I left off. When I pick back up, I've got a career, I'm married, I've got responsibilities, and I have no control whatsoever over when I'm picking up and when I'm going on my runs, and I burn it down hard over a 3.5 month period. Bad. My bottom was started off with my ex-wife and I are at counseling, and she looks at me and she's always, you know, gapping, 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 gapping. I can't hear any of that. So the counselor goes, what is it that you're trying to say to him? And she gets quiet, and she breaks out crying, and she goes, I don't feel safe with him. I was like, oh my God, I'm a monster. Of all the things she could have said to me, that one got me. A week later, I'm on another run, and I'm going and doing my thing in a nasty, gnarly neighborhood. I'm down there and sorted, and it just disgusting. I'm telling you, it was just so bad. And then I come back, and I almost get run over by an 18-wheeler coming home. And I'm supposed to meet her for dinner at 8, and it's about 5 o'clock. I overshoot the mark with my run. And I get home, and I hit the garage door opener, and I get out of the car, and I just, hands-free, slam on the concrete slab, crack my head open. I go up and lay down on the bed, and I wake up to her over me and saying, you know, it's over. I'm done. I can't take this anymore. I roll out on my knees, and I'm just like, God. And for the very first time, I meant it. Because here's what happened to me. Before, I was scared of the consequences. I was scared of losing my job. I didn't want to see my ex-wife that upset. I didn't want to hurt her. But what happened at last relapse was I stopped being afraid of everything going on out here, and I started becoming, I was terrified of me. And I realized that I am going to die if I don't do something. That was when God got. That was the first time there was a seismic shift. Something took place internally. And I ended up going to a meeting that night, and it was a big book study, and some guy's walking around talking about more about alcoholism. And it really grabs me because he's talking about, he's Jim and Ralph for a long, but Jim, and he's talking about the guy's relapse. And then I'm saying to myself, wow, that's what was happening to me. I keep being blindsided by this. I'm not intentionally trying to pick up. I went up and I asked that guy to be my sponsor. He was retired. He said, if you have time, you can meet me. He saw the hard shell of the ego was cracked wide open with me. And he saw, I've got a chance to pour this 12 steps into Jeff before I get back to be feeling pretty good about myself and I can't hear anything anymore. He saw the time was now to get me, and he took me through the steps in 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And I got struck by lightning. I'm telling you, I got struck by lightning. And whatever that was that happened to me, I get so much when Bill Wilson did, in Alcoholic Number 3, Bill Dodson in the book, his story, Henrietta Dodson has got Bill at the dinner table, and Bill Dodson's over in the TV room, and she's like, you know, Bill Wilson, why is it that I appreciate this, but why are you spending so much time with my husband? I appreciate it, but I don't understand, like, what's going on? He says, Henrietta, the good Lord has been so good to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I just have to keep talking about it. I just have to keep talking about it. I get that. Ever since the day that I got struck by lightning, you have not been able to pull me away from trying to find. I had two sponsees at 2 months sober. I'm down at Ridgeview pulling them out of the gutter anywhere I can find them. I am like on fire because I can't wait. Like, this thing that happened to me, I just gotta tell people about it. And that thing has fueled me to this day. It's fueling me right this moment. I mean, that whatever it was that took place. And so you got my step one. Let's go to step two. My mother died a grisly death, and she had given everything to God. She was doing service work. She was doing Easter seals. She was doing drives for the missionaries. And it just all the church and God and everything. And I watched that. I don't want any part of this. I'm sitting there in church. I'm never comfortable in church. All I got is this guy up there with the skull card, going to hell, going to hell, going to hell, boy. And that's what I feel. I'm scared. I'm uncomfortable. I'm never comfortable in that church. I got a younger brother that never heard that, but I did. He's sitting right next to me the whole time. That was what I was hearing. So I couldn't wait to get out of there. When I get here, I hear the word God, and I'm angry. And now what I've come to learn when I did my fifth step was that I was angry because I was afraid. I was afraid I'd tried that, and it's not going to work for me. And I knew I was going to die on my own, so I was like, this isn't going to work. Fortunately, my sponsor shows me in the big book in the Agnostics where it says, we found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there he may be found. And he said, Jeff, where are you focusing when you're praying? And I had to get thinking about it. I'm still up there with the old dude in the sky with the scorecard. And he said, you're going to find him in here. And I said, but God is everywhere. Everybody knows that. He goes, but you haven't found him. You haven't found him yet. Search inside. It was a game changer. In Bill's story, it talks about when Abby told him, why don't you find your own conception of a power greater than yourself? Bill said that melted the icy intellectual mountain from which I'd stood. Bill went from this religious God that he was struggling with to spirituality. It's exactly what happened to me when my sponsor showed me that in the big book. It was a seminal moment in my to get to that awakening, the lightning bolt I got. So then, step three, you know, was just finish the rest of the steps. Today, it's just this constant. My sobriety is all a constant series of surrenders every day. It's this constant series of surrenders. What do you want from me, God? What do you want me to do? It's not about me running the show anymore. I'm not saying I do that perfectly. I don't. But step four, you know, it was the first. It talks about in the big book that we're going to swallow some large doses of truth about ourselves. It was there that I learned so much about. The idea that I was wrong about anything was anathema to me. And I do that four step, and I'm like, I'm wrong about everything. Oh my God, I was horrified. Because I saw, we're going to go back to that seeking approval thing. I saw it on there on all my resentments, and I didn't even have self-seeking check. My sponsor helped me out with that. He was more than happy to help me with that. Because he told me when he first met me that I was scared of people. I'm not scared of people. Are you kidding me? You know, I'll take you down. You know, you ain't messing with Jeff. You know who I am. And I really had that attitude. And I get in, and I look at this on my fifth step, and I realize I am terrified of people. I'm terrified about what you think about me. Why is that? One of the lower layers of the onion was that I just, because deep down, I felt, this underneath the level of consciousness most of the time, I just felt that I'm a piece of crap. I'm no good. I'm broken. I'm dysfunctional. I'm a misfit. I don't fit in. I'm not part of. And I've got all these feelings in here. And if you ever get to know me, you're not going to like me. I just know you aren't. You're going to see what I feel, and you're going to run away from me. And just like the girl did that I fell in love with, I just knew it. And so I get all this on here, and I realize that I'm trying to fight this and protect this idea that I'm no good. And it's all over my resentments. I got 127 of them. About 120 of them were checked by my sponsor, self-seeking, because I wanted your approval. I wanted you to like me. And so they came in all different forms. If you disrespected me, that was just a backwards form of not respecting me, you know, whatever. So I saw that. And I, in my fifth step, I will tell you this. Since my mom had passed, I had never had a healthy relationship with anyone, any woman. I saw that when I was in Charter Peachford. And it disgusted me. Because I looked around at people and I saw them having great romantic relationships and good relationships with their family members and stuff. And I just didn't know how. And the alcoholism had just taken me to a place of disconnection. I wasn't able to connect. Here's the beautiful part about this fifth step. It was the first time in my adulthood since my mom had passed that I took all those things about myself and I set them up on a table and I shined a spotlight on them and I let someone else see it all. And you know what he did? Is that it? Me too. Me too. Nothing on there I haven't heard 1,000 times. And you know what it did? Intimacy, one of the hearts of intimacy is honesty. And I learned for the first time in my adulthood it was okay to be honest with another human being. It was okay to let somebody all the way in. It allowed me to really affect my first relationship with another human being, in like deep one. And then by sponsor and other people, it started working in the reverse. And I started, they told me, don't date anybody for a while, Jeff. You don't need to be. And so I'm starting to work on these relationships with other men that aren't based on anything else and me just trying to give back. And I start to learn how to form healthy relationships with human beings. And I become part of. I slowly become part of. And it's just a beautiful transition. Step 6 and 7, I was about 5-6 years in, and I'm starting to grind down in. I'm grinding down, and it's not. I'm you know, it's dull. I'm hearing the same thing. Oh, there goes Billy again. Going to the meetings, I'm not feeling it. I'm doing my prayer and meditation in the morning. I'm not feeling the connection, and I'm grinding down. Now, depression is not one of my. It's never really been one of my things, but I got depressed, and I spent about 2 months. Getting worse and worse and worse till one day, it's a beautiful weekend day and it's beautiful outside. I got the lime shade and I'm watching the Waltons or something. I'm crying like I always did watching the Waltons when I was drinking. And I go to reach for the remote control and it's like a 2-ounce remote control and I can't pick it up. And I'm like, what's my arm is so heavy with depression. And I realized, you know, something's very, very, very wrong with you, Jeff. And I ended up saying, you got to get your butt up and go to a meeting. You got to take some kind of action because you're going the wrong direction. And I go to a meeting and I hear exactly what I needed to hear. Somebody just goes, God says he'll remove those defects of character which stand in the way of his usefulness to you and others. Because here's what happened. I developed spiritual pride because I was the guy that got struck by lightning. I'm the guy with all these sponsees. I'm the guy that sets up the meeting. I'm the guy. y'all just can't wait to hear Cher when I got my, And so I can't let you in. I've blocked you out again. I got an image I got to keep up. And I learned a very important lesson, and Jennifer kind of touched on it yesterday. I learned a very important lesson. Rule 62, number one, stop taking myself so dang seriously. I'm just one of you guys. I'm just a knucklehead in here trying to get sober, burn my life down to the ground, and I'm just trying to get better one day at a time. That's all I am. And when I came down here and joined you guys after that 6 years, a whole new world opened up. I saw way more of God's world and way less of Jeff's. And God's world is beautiful. God's world is infinite. Jeff's world is not good. In that fifth step, another thing I learned was I was waking up every day, grabbing my sword, trying to protect myself from y'all, because it's a harsh world out there. It's unfair. There's a lot of harm, there's a lot of hurt, and y'all are out to get me. And I got that sword every day going out, and I don't know this. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-seeking, self-pitying, self-centered, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. I realized I became largely free from the defects, from the most hideous ones, and I realized fear, the sword, I dropped it after the fifth step, and I realized y'all can't hurt me. I saw it very clearly. I'm giving y'all that kind of power if that's happening. So 6 and 7, I learned that while I was having these defects of character that I didn't want to show anybody, I need to up my meetings. I need to get some more sponsees. I need to. And I'm grinding down in the ditch. When my head popped out of my backside, I realized, and I heard Sandy Beach say this one time, and I'm like, this is it. He said, these steps are power tools. They got to be plugged in. I'm trying to work the steps under my own power. And I'm grinding into the ditch. It doesn't work that way. It even says in the book, we can have philosophical and moral convictions galore, but the needed power isn't there to carry it out. I need to go to God with these defects and ask Him for help. And I was trying to do it on my own, and I didn't even see it. And it grinded me into the ditch. My sobriety's been different ever since that happened. In fact, I found each time that I go down into the ditch, I come back out seeing more of God's world and less of Jeff's. And God's world is infinite. God's world is beautiful. God's world is full of harmony and peace and tranquility. And Jeff's world is full of danger and relapses and hurt. And so let me get to step 8. I love what it talks about in the 12 and 12. I was assigned to do a 20-minute talk on step 8 in my home group. And I'm like, you go to the big book and they combine 8 and 9. I'm like, talk about step 8. So I open up the 12 and 12, and I was like, I just read like the first paragraph, and I'm like, I could talk for 10 hours on this. It's about relationships and recovery. And I love what it said. It said, now I've read this before, but now I've got to do a 20-minute talk, so now I'm absorbing it. And it said, And it said that when we were out there running and gunning, with our character driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking, we step under. I'm driven by these things. That means I'm not in charge. The fear is driving me. The fear is in charge. When I'm doing that, I've got these character defects that are bringing out the very worst character defects in everyone in my orbit, everyone in my world, in my family, at work, everywhere I go. So no wonder I'm seeing a difficult world. I'm bringing out the worst in everybody around me. And it says in here that when I just wake up in the morning and say, God, what can I do for you and your kids? And I'm not trying to get anything from you, including approval. Then I'm now bringing out the best in people around me. And my world literally changes for the better. Literally. And I've learned just to smile. I've learned how to, like, my biggest defects driving on I-285, I've learned how to bring God into the situation. I standing in line at Kroger, I learned how to, turn around. Somebody else is like, how many coupons do you have? So I just turn around and I start talking to him. And I'll say something nice to the cashier, saying, you handled that real well, the person that just did what I used to do. And so I found a way to always bring God into the... So on I-285, I always let people in. I look for the 18-wheelers and let them in. And it's just my way of bringing God into the situation. Let me get to step... 10, the biggest thing of step 10 for me was the 12 and 12 has this axiom, and it is absolute gold. Now, if you're in your first year of recovery, I understand this is a difficult one because I'm showing up. The old Jeff's showing up all the time in my first year or two. Showing up all the time, and I'm thinking I'm doing it wrong. Why has this happened to me? I don't realize this is part of the growth period, is making mistakes. And early on, I'm thinking I'm supposed to be doing this perfectly. It says, when we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something the matter with us. So where I used to outsource is to say, well, you know, Billy did that to anybody else, they'd be upset too. So I don't have to do any 10-step work on being upset because, I mean, what Billy did, I mean, that's that. I deserve that. That's righteous. And I've learned that when I apply that 10-step axiom, which is a universal truth, to any situation where I'm disturbed, I grow. Instead of sitting there and rationalizing and saying, well, anybody would be upset at that, now I say, Jeff, why are you letting people out here bother you like that? Why are you letting that get under your skin? And as the years go by, I get better. Practice, 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 practice. I'm never going to get to the finish line with this stuff. I'm always going to be practicing. Bill called this a spiritual kindergarten. That's where I'm at. I'm in spiritual kindergarten. The people in these rooms in my early sobriety that used to drive me nuts were my greatest teachers. I owe every one of them a debt because I'm not here today feeling like I do, doing my step 11 in the morning, mostly with tears in my eyes because I'm so grateful. I'm not there without going through that stuff. And I also, it helps me become a better sponsor because I have now application, serious. I have experience with this stuff, not just an intellectual knowledge of the big book, and I'm not just parroting what I read in the big book. I actually have experience, depth and weight with this stuff when I'm taking somebody through. Helps me become a better AA. And so all of my mistakes, they're all... I had an epiphany at 3 years sober. I look back and I got it. I get it, God. My whole life, I can see your fingerprints all over my entire life. I get it now. You've been there the whole time. And I don't get where I'm at right now without all that having happened. And where I'm at is wonderful. Wow. And let me go to step 10 or step 11. I'm sorry, I skipped step 9.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She wants to hear this stuff. She's ready. So, number one, I had told my mother about a month before she died. I was mad at her. And I said, I hope you die of cancer. You guys taught me how to clean that up. You guys taught me how to clean that up. I'm not saying I'm ever good with that one, but I am saying this. No matter what you've done out there, you can get on the other side of it. You've got somebody in here that is going to be able to step you through that. There's directions in the book to get past all this stuff. And I don't have to walk around in guilt and shame with this anymore. I know she's shining down looking at me right now going, that's my boy. But, you know, I did that. So I went up to her grave and my sponsor suggested that I say goodbye because I'd never said goodbye. And so I wrote this goodbye and then I made my amends to her. And it was just profound. It was just profound. I'd like to say there was a you know, hawk in there. None of that happened. But it was profound. It was profound. I was freed from the bondage of that harm that Eve just and so anyway, had another one. I'm going to my meeting and meeting starts at 7 o'clock. And we have I usually like to get there at 6:30 and get my chair, you know. So no newcomer comes in and takes it. Doesn't know that that's my chair. So I like to go get my crappy cup of coffee and sit down, and I always go to the back row looking for the newcomers. That's my thing. And this time something I have a series of events that just are blocking me from getting there on time. Last one of it was like four things. Last one was an accident on I-285. I'm like 5 minutes from the meeting, and it's like 6:35, and I'm looking at the clock in my car, and it's going like this. And it gets to about 4 minutes till 7 or something. And then I just let out an expletive in my car real loud. The spring just burst because I'm not going to get there. And y'all are going to be judging me. I'm walking in late. You know, everybody's going to be like, look at Jeff. He's late. How rude. And seriously, that's what I do. So I let out the expletive, and for some reason I said something I normally don't say, and I brought the rearview mirror down, and I looked myself in the eye and said out loud, "You know nothing happens in God's world by mistake." I said that out loud. Y'all, I swear to God this is true, what I'm saying. I put the rearview mirror back, and about 5 minutes later, it breaks, the traffic breaks, and I'm like, hey, we've got a 15-minute speaker and a 10-minute break. I'll go to this coffee shop that I go to, grab a cup of coffee, good cup of coffee, and then I'll go to the meeting and see the main speaker. So I'm like, okay, everything's solved. It's all good. And I'm like, okay, God, I get it now. You're just, you know, teaching me a lesson. I walk into that coffee shop that I had been to dozens of times before that's packed, and there's only two people in there. And I walk in, and the barista says something to some guy that's reading a book with his back to me. And the guy says something, and I freeze. I stopped dead in my... I knew something was wrong in there. And I freeze. In early 1980s, had a roommate. And I stole... Well, I didn't steal. Somebody stole money from him, and I owed it back to him. And I lied to him and told him I had repaid him. And he was at the top of my amends list. That's the guy sitting in the chair waiting for me. You tell me that was a coincidence.
Yeah.
You tell me saying that in the car, nothing happens. Tell me that was a coincidence. I watch this happen all the time in here. The synchronicity that, did I watch it happen to my sponsees all the time? I got to say this again. I got a sponsee over here. I just started working with him. The first time he came in 2017, he tells me the story. I'm like, dude, do you have any idea what that was? And he says, I was doing my amends, and my uncle, and he gave me my grandmother's Bible. And so then I got my grandmother's Bible, and I was like, wow, you know. And so my sponsor told me, well, why don't you get the book Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox? And so he's like, okay, that's a good idea. He orders it on Amazon used. Comes back, and it's his freaking grandmother's.
Wow.
I said, dude, that does not happen.
No.
That is not coincidence. This is how God works in our lives when we turn it over. I watch this stuff happen all the time. Anybody in here that's been sponsored, people knows it happens.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So let's go to step 11. In the early days, you'll find this in AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the good old timers. They could say there was only the two meetings that they had, one meeting a week, I mean, at each group. But they considered step 11 more important than even going to that one meeting a week. You could once in a while have a reason to miss that meeting once in a while, but you were not allowed to miss doing your step 11 in the morning for your sobriety. I take that to heart today, that I got to be doing my step 11 in the morning. When I'm sponsoring people, every time they call me, first thing, what'd you do today, this morning? First 10 minutes, give it to me. I'm on them all the time, hounding them about that. I'm relentless about it because I want them to get in the habit of praying in the morning. And I do the prayer of St. Francis. I think Jerry talked about that. The prayer of St. Francis is my favorite. And I just say each line, and I just take a couple breaths. And sometimes, where there is, you know, where there's doubt, I may bring faith. I always say that where there is fear, I may bring faith, because that's what it is. All the components of the evening inventory and the 10-step inventory in the big book, they're all in that prayer of St. Francis. And I just say that every morning, and I take a couple breaths after each line, and every once in a while, that where there's wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, someone's face floats into my consciousness. And I'm like, and then the fear one, that where there's fear, I may bring faith. Sometimes I'm sitting there, and I realize my shoulders are all hunched up, and I catch myself. It's just a way to diagnose when I go through that thing every morning. way before I'm going to pick up a drink, I'm already on top of these defects that are on me, and I'm able to start working through them. That's worked so far. We get to step 12. I just got to tell you, this program of working with it, you know, there's three parts to it. The spiritual experience, one thing. But I want to tell you some stories that that have happened to me. When I say yes in AA. Oh, first of all, I do service. I do the AA hotline. I love that. I got these people, what they calling me, and they don't know anything about what they're, and they're desperate. If you ever called the hotline, you know. I love talking to those people. Oh my God, what an honor to get that call, even though it's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt being on the list because you got to be on call. You got to be no matter where you're at. I do the prison work. I got certified and I get to go into the prisons. I love finding the people that have been broken down the hardest with this. And I say, but for the grace of God, there go I, because I look at those guys in the prison and I say, look, guys, I'm no better than you. I just didn't get caught, and it's not because I'm any smarter. I did the same thing to y'all guys. It's not because I'm any smarter. Not at all. I'm looking at myself, and I tell them that's why I come here. Because I know, and so we pulled some guys out of here, but I pulled this guy out of the DeKalb County Jail, and we were taking meetings over there, and he had 6 years sober at the time, and Rick called me and said, Jeff, will you come over and say grace? He just bought a big house over in Stone Mountain. It was a long drive, like 45-minute drive for me. He said, will you come over and say grace? It would be a real honor. And the way he put it, I was like, I didn't want to. And inside I'm going, no, because I was home. I had family coming in town a couple days later, and I was going to bachelorette. I had the Rambo movies all lined up in a prime rib oven, and it was Christmas Eve, and I was like, good. And he calls me, and I'm like, so I said yes, because that's what I've been taught to do. I go over there, wow, say yes. I go over there, Rick had gotten the right to go back into DeKalb County Jail, and he's pulled two other guys out of there. And I've got the three guys from DeKalb County Jail and their family and their children. And I'm looking at this going, wow, Rick's child. Rick has an 8-year-old daughter or 10-year-old daughter, somewhere like that, and she's following around the house like a puppy. Rick is her world, and I'm holding her hand while we're saying grace, and she's blind. I lost my mother when I was a kid. What that did for me, when I saw that little blind girl, special needs girl, get her dad back, I drove back home. So it was the greatest experience I'd had all year. And I said, thank you, God. And when I got home, I ate prime rib and watched Rambo. I was just like, yeah. I got another one. I was in here about it. I had about a year at the time. I'm going through a divorce. And I get a call from my brother, who was alcoholic. And I never pressed this thing on him. And he just said, Jeff, I'm going through a divorce. Let's get together. He lives in Pennsylvania. So I fly up there. We go to decide to drive up to New York to my hometown. And we're driving over the Pocono Mountains. Just absolutely beautiful. It's a gorgeous day. Sun's out. It's beautiful. Nobody's around but me and him going over these beautiful mountains. And something comes up. And he said, I can't remember. It was about the pain we were going through. He said, where'd you get that from? And I said, oh, you know, I get that from my program of AA. And he goes, really? And so I pulled out the 12 and 12 that was in my bag right behind me. I pull it out and I read it. And I'm choking up and I can hardly get through the second paragraph. I can feel the presence of God so strong in the cabin of that car. I can hardly get it out. And he gets quiet. And then he goes, Jesus, Jeff, who wrote that? And I said, a guy named Bill Wilson. He goes, is that what you guys do in AA? He's like, I've never heard anything written. So he's like, that's me. So I pulled out the stage. He goes, read something else. I pulled out the stage actor. We go up to New York. He continues drinking like he does. And I fly back to Atlanta. 3 days later, I get a call from him. Hey, Jeff, Just got back from a meeting. I'm not drinking anymore. He hadn't had a drink since. We were up camping. My younger brother's in sobriety too. He got here 13 years ago. We were up camping last year. Me, my older brother, him, the guy that was in the car, and my younger brother. We're sitting around the campfire after we've been talking about how beautiful our lives are for 2 days. We've just been talking about the gifts of the sponsees and the fellowship and God, having God in our lives and how we were freed from this horrible disease. And we're sitting around the campfire, and I'm just like, you know, guys, if it wasn't for AA, I'd be dead right now. I know it. I'd be dead by now, long dead. And my brother, Fritz, who was in the car, goes, well, me too. My younger brother goes, me too. And we all looked at each other. We were like, wow. Wow. You see, my older brother, right before he called me, we rode through the Poconos, was about to blow his head off. And he called me. I didn't find that out till later. AA saved our lives. I got a great relation. He's sitting right there. I got one more story. This is a continued growth program. The fourth dimension is it's limitless. It's infinite. I love this. When I first had my burning bush experience, I had walked through. Bill talks about the structure that we're building to walk through to the fourth dimension. When I got that, I thought I had arrived. It's true, I had arrived, but I arrived at the beginning. And I did not know that. Looking back, I realized that was maybe 5% of everything. The rest of it has been taking people through the book and growing myself through those experiences and then things I've done wrong and going through them. And I had a couple years ago, young, just beautiful girl, studied overseas, 30 years old, had come in and she was just broken. I mean, just broken. Broken. And she came into this big book study I was doing on Wednesdays, and she had asked my partner in a big book study that we do, you know, will you be my sponsor? I don't know if you're going to want to sponsor me after I tell you what I've done. She was so ashamed of herself. And we could just see the brokenness on her. And, you know, Heather, my partner, said, of course I will. Over the course, she was on her third DUI. She just had one 2 months before. It was pending. And then in a blackout, all three were car accidents. The last one, she rear-ended a police officer at 63 miles an hour. And it almost killed him. And her boyfriend had just died of the disease a year before that. And she was crushed. We got the experience because of COVID. She didn't, her sentence kept, or her being, going to court kept on getting delayed. I got to kind of, in a paternal way, help her with a lot of this heavy stuff she was going through. After meetings, we said, you know, we all know it, right? Standing outside when you got somebody and you're kind of giving them a little experience, strength, and hope, and you realize, wow, this person is really going through a lot. So we developed this relationship, and I watched her go from broken to lit. I watched her start working with others and helping other people, and this beautiful woman glowing. And the cop had told her, if you pay me back all my, she liquidated all of her assets, gave the cop all this money, and he said, I won't ask for prison time. So we're told by the lawyer that she's not going to get prison time. And we're all like, thank God, AA, you know, save the day. She gets there, and the girl, the cop changes his mind and says, I just can't allow this to happen. I want her to have prison time. Judge, 15 years, 5 served. Now, for the next 5 days or so, I couldn't eat. It felt like my insides had been shredded out, ripped apart, eviscerated. And I didn't know what was wrong. And we're processing with Heather and her boyfriend, because we all, Dara was our little girl that we, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't identify this, what this is. Over the course of time, and I got it. I got it. Through that deep pain, I learned something that I always thought I didn't have. When I saw y'all, and I saw some of the compassion y'all had for other people, it really warmed my heart and blew me away. And I always wondered, why can't you have that level of compassion for others? I mean, I care about people, but not that. And I realized what was going on was I had reached another level in the spiritual dimension. I had developed the gift of compassion at a deep, deep level, because that's what it was. I couldn't identify it because I'd never gone through that before. And I remember reading some Hindu text or something that said, you know, when you have compassion for others and you can feel their pain as if it's yours, you've reached a level of enlightenment or something like that. I remember reading that going, wow, that, I remember reading that now. And guess what else happened? I started feeling my sponsee's joy. It happened at the same time. I started being able to feel those little things that they were coming to me, you know, oh my God, you know, and these little things. And I'm like feeling it like it just happened to me. This program blows me away. It's this thing that never ends. I keep on learning more about myself, more about y'all, more about God's world. And I just can't think of anything else I'd rather do. I found myself. I know who I am. I have purpose now. I have meaning in life. My life has meaning. Everything good in my life I found through you guys. I got my family back. I got my brothers. All that came from me coming in here and surrendering that day. And everything else I got back here. Thanks for letting me share.